couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Joker, Groupers, Low Tide, and I'm also going to take a look back at vintage movies The Man Who Laughs and The Last Man on Earth. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Doom Annihilation. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
First of all, before we even start with the news, I want to wish everybody a happy October. That means it is officially time for horror movies. I'm not doing a ton of horror movies, but I am dipping my toe into it this week. Of course, I'm going to be talking about The Last Man on Earth, which is a horror film. It's the original adaptation of I Am Legend. And then there's also going to be looking at The Man Who Laughs, which isn't really a horror movie, but it provided the inspiration for the look of the Joker back when that character was created in the 40s. But the other pieces of news aren't really about horror, but they are about comic books. One of them is Spider-Man is coming back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm sure everybody's heard that already. This is a big deal because there was that split between Marvel Studios and Sony. What they basically have been able to do is they've been able to iron out an agreement for keeping him in there for one more movie, one more standalone Spider-Man movie, and one more Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. I'm assuming it's going to be an Avengers type of film. I actually have a prediction to make. Nobody knows the details of this, but I know they'll make another Spider-Man movie, and then that will be co-produced and co-financed, and they get their profits back. But then Sony wants to break off and do their own, and they've been telegraphing it. And the only reason they brought Spider-Man back into the Marvel Cinematic Universe is they needed that influx of cash and good juju for making movies after the giant Sony hack almost decimated the company. But here's the thing. Marvel Studios is going to write off Spider-Man. The reason they wanted to keep it, at least for another two movies to have him involved in, is at least they can now provide an ending to the character. It was frustrating initially because he was just going to not be in any more movies, and they're going to have to figure out what happens after, you know, the setup of what's going to be happening after Spider-Man Far From Home. That's kind of a big setup. That is setting things up for another movie. They want to be able to finish that. But when they finish it, they're going to get rid of Spider-Man 100%. They're going to say, you know what? We're not going to play this game. We're not going to just renegotiate this every two or three years. We need to plan 10 years in advance, not back-ending characters in and out and maybe and not. The Marvel has proved for over a decade that they don't need the Spider-Man character in the universe, and that's okay. It's the same reason why they were okay of letting the X-Men not be in the universe for a while until now they own it. Because now they can just start putting the X-Men in, and you've got Wolverine, etc., that are now going to be showing up in those movies. So mark my words, this is my prediction. Marvel Studios will kill off Spider-Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe after those two movies, and are going to work it out, and that's what they're going to do. And Sony's going to be left holding the bag and not be making as good of movies. The next piece of news I want to hit, and I'll talk a little bit about this also when I start reviewing Joker. There have been concerns that there would be events happening with the Joker movie, that there would be violence happening. And this comes from a couple different reasons. The first is, I think the last time we had the Joker successfully imagined in a movie, I'm not counting Suicide Squad because that thing was a pile of hot garbage, but I'm talking about The Dark Knight. The following film in that Batman universe, that's when you had the Aurora shooting, which was horrible and terrible. And that episode is always going to taint the Batman properties. And because the shooter called himself the Joker and dyed his hair and all that kind of stuff, made people associate it with that character. And so I think they're worried that a similar themed movie is going to inspire violence. Now, the other thing that happened was apparently the U.S. Army sent out a memo to its personnel to essentially say, watch your back. Make sure you know your exits and be aware of your surroundings if you're going to the Joker movie, because supposedly somebody had heard chatter somewhere that there might be violence associated with it. We'll see if that happens. And if it did, first of all, we got to get over the fact the movies do not cause people to be violent. Now, that doesn't mean that people can't draw inspirations from movies or say, well, I want to look cool, so I'm going to put on this coat, which is essentially what happened. Kind of what tied the Matrix movies to Columbine was they came in these big dusters because it reminded, they thought they looked cool like Neo from the Matrix. But that doesn't mean the Matrix caused these kids to shoot up a school. The other thing is, I think some people are, there have been like alerts, and there are police that are being stationed by these theaters, and they're saying, well, just in case something happens, we had those alerts when Straight Outta Compton came out, because everyone was afraid that everyone was going to start gangbanging during those movies. So just because there's a concern for something does not mean that it's going to happen. And I think I'm all for security. You have the security at the theaters. Now, we're not going to let people wear face paint. They're not going to let people wear masks. And that's becoming a pretty standard thing after what happened back in 2012 in Aurora. But the idea that Joker as a film is going to inspire violence, I think, is going a little bit overboard. And I'm going to talk more about it in specifics, because everyone was worried about this movie and hadn't seen it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Richard Jewell, which is Clint Eastwood's new movie, which opens on December 13th.
Richard, you're a national hero now.
Thank you, sir. But I was just doing my job.
You always look at the guy who found the bomb just like you always look at the guy who found the body.
Jewell fits the profile of the lone bomber.
A frustrated white man who is a police wannabe who seeks to become a hero.
We're running it.
You're a suspect. You don't talk.
I talk. Say it.
I don't talk.
This might be the only way to clear your name.
First of all, can I give some props to Clint Eastwood for continually releasing one to two movies every year? This guy's a workhorse and he's like 90 or 89 or something like that. The trailer makes the movie look interesting because I remember when this whole Richard Jewell thing happened. News at that time, and I talked about this during I, Tonya, which is funny because the same guy who played Galooly's friend in I, Tonya plays Richard Jewell. But at this time in the 90s, there was this ramp up of tabloid television and sort of this pearl clutching and panic in the streets that the media did whip up into a frenzy. And the media is very, very different now than it was back 20 some years ago when this happened, but it'll be interesting to see how they put this together and where they're blaming this person and that person, because it looks like there's a lot of blame being thrown around and who's innocent and who wasn't and what actually happened. I'm very curious to see a somber take on this, which you always get with Clint Eastwood. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Birds of Prey, which opens on February 7th.
You know what a harlequin is? A harlequin's role is to serve. It's nothing without a master. The Joker and I broke up. I wanted a fresh start. But it turns out I wasn't the only dame in Gotham looking for emancipation.
I'm the one they should be scared of. Not you. Not Mr. J. Because I'm Harley freaking Quinn.
This is the Margot Robbie-led pseudo sequel to Suicide Squad. You get Harley Quinn getting her own movie, but of course she's got the other DC anti-heroines with her. But I'm looking forward to this for Margot Robbie's point. This looks like it might be overproduced a little bit. It does look like the production design is overpowering in the trailer, but Margot Robbie looks fantastic in it and looks like she's really getting into the character. She's what's going to save the movie, which is what happened with Suicide Squad. She was so good in that movie, and that, like I said, that movie was hot garbage. It'll be nice to see her shine, and we'll see what happens with the rest of the film. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the smaller films Low Tide and Groupers when we return.
Thank you.
welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with some smaller films. And I say smaller films because Joker is so pervasive right now. It's the only big wide release. I think they're expanding Judy. I talked about that last week. That's expanding into theaters. And there's another smaller film, Lucy in the Sky, about space travel. And that one hopefully will expand. I might end up having to cover that in another award season if I ever get a screener for that, because I haven't heard anything about any screening locally for me. But there are a couple other smaller films that I want to take a look at. One of them is Low Tide. This comes to us from A24, which partnered with DirecTV, and they've done a handful of these that are smaller films on the cable service that were VOD before the release in theaters, but it's getting a release this weekend. And as I said, the movie is Low Tide. A group of teens in a seaside town break into a home and steal valuables, only to stumble upon a stash of gold coins worth thousands of dollars.
Are you guys just going to stay down here?
No, we're actually just going exploring.
Where?
That peninsula across the bay.
Sounds like an adventure.
Get to the boat.
Don't you run!
You're right. You left me. I waited, but no one showed. Don't go accusing me.
We leave it buried here. We don't tell anyone.
Find anything decent? No.
At its core, this is a suspense movie, and it's in a different setting. It feels like one of those heist movies where they need to hide what they have, but I mean, it's the most inept heist in the world. It's basically this group of kids, and they live in a resort area. I think it's in New Jersey somewhere. And they, you know, it's a seaside town, has a boardwalk, has a beach, and it has all the tourists come in from the city and from out of town. And that's what supports their economy. But as you get with a lot of these places that have townies and visitors, I saw this when I was in college. I went to Bowling Green State University in Ohio, and there's a town of Bowling Green. But when the students are in town, the town gets much bigger. And the townies sometimes resented the students, and the students sometimes resented the townies. And you get that in places that are basically vacation areas, because the people who live there are just kind of living their daily life, and they don't see the place as a vacation because they have to work and live their miserable existences. While people on vacation come out, they usually have more money, and they usually treat the townies with less respect. That's not an uncommon thing. So it's this group of teens that go and they steal petty theft from houses. They get jewelry and TVs and electronics and try and sell them. And there's a pawn shop that they work with. But in this one, they go to this one place that the guy who was living there had died, and the place was sitting empty because he didn't have any family, while they're figuring out what to do. And they find this stash, it's all these gold coins. And it's them then hiding it, and each person in the team that does these heists has a secret that they're trying to keep from each other, and nobody trusts anybody, and they shouldn't, because they're all kind of sleazy guys. But the smartest one is the brother of one of the guys who is usually not brought in on this, and he's the one who is the fly in the ointment on this, because he doesn't just give over what he got to everybody, and there's no respect between him and the sort of the ringleader, who is a real jerk himself. It's not a great movie. It has its moments of decent acting. It has some moments of suspense where you really don't know what's going to happen, because you can't tell what each of the kids are going to do. I mean, you know that the ringleader is a real jerk, and you know he's going to end up being the bad guy, and you know who the good guys are going to be. But it does have a healthy dose of realism, because you have these kids that don't know what to do and how to keep their mouth shut, and they end up getting into more trouble because, as a lot of criminals are, they're kind of dumb sometimes, and they make foolish decisions. So it's a bit of a slow burn. Decent acting and an okay pacing reminds me a little bit of, you know, something like when Rian Johnson did the movie Brick, and it was meant to be kind of like a high school film noir movie, where it's sort of taking a genre and applying it to an less than expected situation or setting. And that's kind of what this feels like. I'm going to have to give it a kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film, which is Groupers. A young woman lures the bullies who had tormented her brother in high school into an abandoned pool where she ties them up for an unusual experiment.
So, do you think you could, like, fake it? You know, pretend like me? Like that?
I need you to sound more like a woman.
I'm going to warn you, if anyone wants to go see this movie, the push of it, her brother is gay in the movie, and these guys are his bullies. They just consistently pounded on him and bullied him and chased him around and beat him up and humiliated him and just were relentless to him in high school. And it's the sister, she's trying to get revenge for them on behalf of her brother. But at the same time, she's also in college doing like psychology. And so she's trying to do the psychological experiment. The bottom line is the idea of homophobia and is homosexuality a choice or is it not, is just put out there right in front. And it gives a really interesting approach to it because I don't care where you fall personally in your decisions on this, you could be right or wrong, but this puts it in a perspective that if you sit there and think to yourself, what would I do in this situation? I think it definitively can tell people, well, is this a choice or not? You make that decision. I think the answer is pretty clear. So it does deal with homophobia and it does deal with bullying and in not just in the way of the effect that it has on people, but it also the excuses that the bullies give. Oh, we were just being kids. We were just having some fun. And that's what I hate, that excuse. The boys will be boys excuse. It's like, no, bad behavior is bad behavior. You don't get to excuse it by just saying, oh, we were young and stupid. It's still bad behavior. You don't get forgiven just because you think it wasn't that big of a deal. You may have had a profound impact on people. I know people who've been bullied and their bully doesn't remember. I had a bully when I was growing up. I guarantee you he doesn't remember what torment he put on me, but he was a real a-hole about the whole thing. He owns a business now in town, and I found my wife had at one point was a patron to the business. I told her she can't do it anymore because he was a bully. And I know the stuff he did 30, 40 years ago, he's probably not like that now, but the heck with him. Screw him, you know? You can't sit there and say, oh, it's just okay behavior. It's just kids. It's, oh, you're just having a bit of fun. Well, what you thought was fun, it's like keep away. Or what is it? Pickle in the middle or whatever the thing is where you have something and two people are throwing it back and forth. And you may think it's hilarious, but the person who's being teased doesn't. Teasing, malicious teasing is not okay. I mean, goofing around and having fun's okay. But when one person is actually being tormented and doesn't like it, that means it's not good. And that's the difference between teasing and having fun. And these guys weren't having fun. They were teasing and being bullies. So I think this is a little bit, you get a little bit of vicarious revenge through this, but it also puts a lot of questions at light. And I think it has some interesting twists and turns, and not anyone's a real 100% good guy or 100% bad guy. I think it's an interesting movie and it's absolutely worth checking out. So I'm going to have to say Groupers kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Man Who Laughs and Joker.
This is Halloween. This is Halloween. Pumpkins scream in the dead of night. This is Halloween. Everybody make a...
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk more about some movie reviews with a retro review. It's a very retro review. This movie's almost 100 years old. And that is The Man Who Laughs. Now, there's no trailer for this because it's a silent film. It came out in the 20s. It's based on a classic Victor Hugo story about this guy in as a traveling entertainer, and his face has been permanently disfigured. And he's, of course, falling in love with the woman he works with, and she's blind. Now, the reason I'm picking this movie, and like I said, it's not a horror movie. It's directed by a German guy, even though it's an American production. It has this German expressionism look to it. And if you've ever seen The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, you understand what the look of German expressionism is. It's very angular and dark. It has a Germanic look to it. Now, it stars Conrad Veidt as the character Gwynplaine, who is the guy with the permanent smile. He was surgically made to always have a smile, and he, no matter what happens, he can't not smile. He'll be sitting there crying, but smiling. And the reason I chose this week is because it's Veidt's image and his look as this Gwynplaine character who was the inspiration for the original Joker back in the 1940s in the Batman comics. So the white face and the big red lips and the green hair, even though it's black and white, you didn't know I had green hair. But that's what is the visual inspiration. And what's even also interesting about it is when you watch this film, a couple things become very prominent. First of all, early Hollywood was very obsessed with image. And I'm talking about anything like from the 60s and before. By the time you got to the 70s, people realized, oh, you can be ugly and be a decent person. But before those, there was always things like, oh, well, if you're ugly in real life, that made you an ugly person. And I mean, this movie is like at one point, Queen Anne wants to embrace this character, but everyone's like, oh, he's so ugly. He's laughing at us. He's hideous. He's a fiend. He's a clown. And it's like, well, just because his face is stuck like that does not mean that you are hideous. And, but that's just ingrained. That's like not even questioned in this film. The other thing I found so interesting about this was how it is relevant to even the Joker movie that's coming out this week, is because it shows him having to be a certain way and act a certain way when he's struggling tragically to not. And that's one thing that is apparent in the movie Joker, which I'm going to talk about in a little bit. It shows the struggle and the dichotomy that's in that character, which is what, you know, like Batman has a dichotomy. Batman has both Bruce Wayne and Batman. He has this conflict. The Joker had this conflict, but then went fully insane and no longer has the emotion. But this origin story Joker is showing what he was like beforehand. So The Man Who Laughs is an interesting movie. It's a little bit long and it's not a terribly fast-moving film, but it's well-made and it's interesting to watch, and it's a piece of cinematic history. I suggest checking it out and tracking it down. And I'm going to say The Man Who Laughs rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
The next one I want to hit is, of course, the big one this weekend, and that is Joker. Joaquin Phoenix stars as a mentally unstable clown performer in the origin story of Batman's evil nemesis.
Gotham has lost its way. What kind of coward would do something that cold-blooded? Someone who hides behind a mask.
I used to think that my life was a tragedy. But now I realize it's a comedy.
There's really no definitive origin of the Joker. Most people will lean towards the Killing Joke, which was a graphic novel in the 80s that flashes back to him as this failed comedian who had to go turn to petty crime, and then when he fell into a chemical vat, that's what turned him into the white face and the green hair and the permanent smile, and that made him go insane. But part of the allure of the Joker character is there is no definitive origin story. Nobody knows. And they played around with that in The Dark Knight back in 2008. And I thought that was neat because there was, obviously he came from somewhere, but there's a mystery behind him as to who he is. This one, they actually give him a backstory and they actually give him a human origin, so to speak. And Joaquin Phoenix plays the character. And the biggest reason to see this movie is for his performance. He is fantastic in it. And I'm going to throw around the Oscar word. I mean, this is one of those very intense, immersive performances. And it really does show the conflict in the character as he goes from mild mannered and troubled to fully on insane and violent. But I do kind of warn everybody, this movie is a grown up film. This is not an action movie. There's no fisticuffs. There's no car chases. There's no big CGI moments. Batman does not swoop in at the end and punch the Joker out and get the word splat on the screen like the old TV show. This is a slow burn, deliberately paced, dark, disturbing, and at times depressing drama. If you got a kid who's 6 years old and loves the Batman, do not take them to this movie. This is a dark, heavy, depressing movie on the level of Taxi Driver or Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. One of these films that attempts to get in the mind of an insane person. And to that wit, you know, people talked about, and I was saying in the first segment about people worried, oh, well, you know, what if we have people that are going to be, you know, copycatting? Well, first of all, if you've seen the movie and you look at the violent situations that Joker gets in or this character gets in, it's not something that's easily executable. So, I mean, the idea that people would think that there would be copycats of things that happened in the movie is ultimately absurd because you would not be able to conveniently set this up. It's either a random situation that he ends up in a bad situation, or it's something incredibly contrived that not everybody's going, you wouldn't just be able to create this situation or ever get away with it. Now, there's all these people worried, oh, well, you know, for all the incels out there, you know, incel meaning involuntarily celibate. These guys who are like, oh, well, no girl likes me. And I'm like, okay, yeah, there are people like that, but that's a you problem. That's not the society's problem. And also, you're probably going after nines and tens. You know, lower your standards, people, you know, because you know what? For those of you out there who think, oh, well, you know, nobody understands me, go to the state fair, find the most unattractive, unappealing person, and you will find out that they're probably married or at least have a boyfriend or girlfriend. I mean, if you can't keep somebody, that's a you problem. And, you know, is it possible that insane people could relate to this and disturbed people could? Yeah, absolutely. Just as insane and disturbed people could relate to Travis Bickle. But that doesn't mean that Martin Scorsese did a disservice to society by making Taxi Driver. And I do keep going on the Taxi Driver angle, partly because Robert De Niro's in this and they kind of play around with that element. And they also play around with the element of Rupert Pupkin from The King of Comedy. That kind of fits in the backstory on this. The reality, this is not a sympathetic story of the Joker. This is more a, hey, this is what can happen to people. If you have a society that treats mental illness like this and gives no help to them. And also by people, you know, being unkind to individuals, as happens to this guy, this can be a breeding ground for violent behavior. But I don't think at any point you may feel sorry at times for the character, but I don't think you're supposed to sympathize with him. And it's also not a comedy. I mean, there's some funny things that there's a very dark moments, dark comedic moments, but it's not a comedy. There was at the screening, there was this group of people and they were laughing and if you're going to find this movie funny, you are either going to be somebody who is a psychopath yourself and you find tragic pain funny, or you're too stupid to understand the nuance and the subtext. And that's, I think, what these people are. I was explaining to somebody, I said, people who would find this movie funny are like the people who could watch a rape scene and be turned on by it. And you're just like, no. So this movie is depressing, and it's hard to say it's entertaining because it's uncomfortable to watch in a lot of points, but it's also a very good film. I'm going to have to say that the Joker rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Last Man on Earth, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring Doom Annihilation. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews with one that is an older film because it's horror movie month. It's October. I have now started my thing of trying to watch a horror movie a day. Sometimes I make it, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm watching 3 or 4 horror movies a day. This weekend, I'm going to be watching tons of horror movies because I love them. Plus, I got a couple releases that I got to talk about for upcoming weeks on DVD and Blu-ray. But one of my favorite horror actors of all time is Vincent Price. That's an easy bet. You know, I love Vincent Price. I love Christopher Lee. I love Peter Cushing. I love these old, rich horror movies that they played in. And the thing with Vincent Price is he's such a charismatic guy, and in any movie he's in, he could be in a light comedy and he'd still have that horror movie feel to him. And what's funny, you wouldn't necessarily think that. He's got kind of this nice little voice and he's a kind looking man, but he just fits so well in the horror genre, and he embraced it too. That's one of the things I loved about Vincent Price, is he embraced his place in the horror community. He didn't run from it. But this is based on the original book by Richard Matheson, I Am Legend. Now, of course, it's been made into other movies. It was made into The Omega Man with Charlton Heston, with the disco vampires in that one. And then it was made into I Am Legend, what, like 12 years ago with Will Smith. And that was an okay movie, but while it was a bigger movie and a much more grand and colorful movie, it didn't hold the same charm because Will Smith is no Vincent Price. In The Last Man on Earth, Vincent Price stars as a man living in an apocalypse in which the dead bodies resurrect as vampires or zombies or whatever. They really don't, they say vampires, but they're basically zombies.
Further, I have, in conjunction with the federal government, declared this state to be a disaster area.
You don't believe some of the dead have come back?
Sent to keep you here until they come
to kill me.
I have to say that all three versions of this story, I mean, they're your basic zombie. I'm going to say they're zombies. They say vampires because they don't like the sun, but they storm the house like zombies. They look like zombies. They don't look like vampires. So I like to think of it as zombies. I mean, you look at some of the shots from this movie and you can see where this predated Night of the Living Dead, but has that same look where they're like, it's kind of walking around. Oh, come in. And of the three films, this is the smallest one. The I Am Legend that they made with Will Smith 12 years ago, that one was overblown and bombastic and at times obnoxious. The one with Charlton Heston was a bigger movie and it had explosions. And of course it was Charlton Heston in the early 70s. He was coming off big things like Planet of the Apes and Soylent Green. The problem with that one is that since it was made in the 70s, you had all the 70s style and it was supposed to be, you know, sort of the lower classes of representing the vampire zombies or whatever they are coming back. So you had these vampires with like afros and wearing bell-bottom pants and platform shoes. It looked ridiculous at times. This is a much more intimate one. A good chunk of it is just Vincent Price wandering around talking to himself or keeping a ledger. And it doesn't have a whole lot of horrific stuff. When they do get some bigger scenes, whether he's at the pit where they're burning all the bodies of the dead before they don't, so they don't arise, that's always a neat scene. And those grand sort of deserted looks of the world are quite fantastic. But yeah, it does feel like a much smaller movie. But yeah, I've watched these movies many times over the years, and I have to say this is my favorite of the adaptations of the story, but still, it has its foibles. So I'm going to have to say that Last Man on Earth just kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week, Downton Abbey was not able to repeat as top of the heap, but it still made like $14 million. It had like just over a 50% drop, which is fantastic. And I said that's going to be okay because the audience for Downton Abbey, you're talking about an older audience, older generation, they're not out to see it the very first weekend. They'll take several weeks to go check this out. So this is going to be floating in the top 10 for probably all of October and well into November. Abominable made about $20 million, a little bit more, which isn't bad. It was on expectations. It was only a $75 million movie, so it's not like it's suffering much. Judy came in at number 7 with about $3 million, which isn't bad. I mean, for the size of the release, it was only in 400 and some theaters. And everything else kind of fell down into the run here. So this weekend, of course, Joker's going to be a huge hit. So expect to see that one winning the box office by the, by now it's won the box office. You're listening listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The spotlight this week is on a direct-to-video film, and that is Doom Annihilation, because I wasn't sent Spider-Man Far From Home, so I'm not going to cover that one. In this direct-to-video sequel to the early 2000s video game movie, a group of soldiers are sent to a Mars outpost where there's a violent outbreak.
Man received a distress signal moments before the base went offline.
Move up. Die, die, die! He's going on.
They opened up a portal to hell.
What's funny is this pairs nicely with Last Man on Earth in the sense that it's essentially a zombie movie, even though they're not really zombies. Now, I remember when the first Doom came out. I've watched people play the game. I remember watching people play the game on PCs and Macs when I worked in a publishing house back in the 90s. I was never into the game. I never really played it. But I saw what the game was. And then when they made the movie with The Rock and Dwayne Johnson and Carl Urban, I remember seeing it and thinking it was okay. But see, I, not having played the game, it's not something, I just wanted a decent sci-fi movie. And here's the problem with video game movies, and I've said this before. Movies are plot and character driven. Video games are premise driven. And a video game can have a great premise. I mean, Resident Evil has a great premise and a great setup, but there's no real plot to it aside from a very loosely generated plot to get through a certain area. Silent Hill's the same way. It's a fantastic setup, but it kind of makes a convoluted movie. And you see that with Doom Annihilation. This film, it's, look, I've seen the trailer. It's just a bunch of blowing things up. And then I saw the movie and I'm like, this is exactly what it purports to be. It's just the setup of these mindless zombie type creatures attacking, and they somehow infect humans, and there's this portal. It's incredibly needlessly convoluted, and it seems to rely on you knowing what happened in the first Doom, even though that movie came out 15 years ago. They didn't do enough stuff kind of like getting the audience up to speed. It just feels very rushed. It's convoluted. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And the characters are terrible. Like, there's this one, the one character, the character's name is, I think, like Joan Black or Joan Dark. That's her name. And, or Joan or Joyce. I forget. I don't even care. But this is the character, the actress who plays her is just sort of, there's no real charisma there. She's no Sigourney Weaver. They're trying to make her turn into a Ripley. And I think they wanted a modern version of Ripley that they could do. She's not like Sigourney Weaver. She's not like Linda Hamilton. She's not like Angelina Jolie. She is not an action hero. She's not even that great of an actor. Reason that this is happening, sort of like the people that are pulling the strings and pushing the buttons, it doesn't even make a whole lot of sense as to why they're doing it. It just, you know, if all you want is absolute mindless violence and action, you're going to get that. Watch the movie. You'll love it. But for me, I wanted something more, even though it's just a stupid direct-to-DVD. I just wish they would have done more for the people who hadn't seen or played the game Doom. I mean, I think they really limited their audience. Anyways, in the end, I have to say Doom Annihilation sucks.
It sucks.
Other releases this week include, as the aforementioned, Spider-Man Far From Home, plus 4K versions of a bunch of Marvel movies, including Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, and Doctor Strange. There's also 4K releases of Frozen, of course, for the new Frozen 2, and then The Shining, because you got Dr. Sleep coming up in a couple weeks, and Pan's Labyrinth. Plus, re-releases of The Addams Family and Addams Family Values, and also Chernobyl. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, we're going to be talking about The Addams Family and Gemini Man. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.